present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website read by Neil Sleat.
A care home matron who took a sex toy into work has been cleared to continue practising.
Thanks to Sarah McKenna for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Susan Kalman and Lucy Porter. And opposite them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Phil Jupitus. Susan, which head-to-head contest sadly wasn't a double knockout?
Oh, yes. This was, I think everyone can agree, the political event of the year thus far. It was the debate on Europe between Nick Clegg and Nigel Farage. I watched the whole thing. I was glued to it. It was quite strange because it was built up rather oddly. It was kind of like when you go to your local community centre to see their production of Phantom of the Opera. It's not quite what you were expecting. Nick Ferrari was hosting it, built up. It was hilarious. I found it hilarious anyway. He starts off by saying, "This is it. This is the moment you've all been waiting for decades." It was extraordinary. Not since Alexis Carrington Colby Dexter slapped Crystal Carrington in The Fountain and Dynasty has there been such a gigantic match between two equals. Nigel Farage was quite surprisingly against Europe.
No.
Nick Clegg was for it. And that was about as surprising as it kind of got. But the end of it, the point was, I think it was something like 56% of people said they thought Nigel Farage had won the argument, and 36% thought that Nick Clegg did better, which is a really high score for Nick Clegg these days. I think he'd be quite delighted by it.
The weird thing about it was then you were supposed to care, because you were supposed to vote, weren't you, which was
yes.
better. And it's like being asked which is better, a migraine or diarrhoea.
Nick looked like a man who just hated himself. Mm. It just, how did he get to that situation from 4 years ago when everyone agreed with him and he was a great new hope to standing next to Nigel Farage having to explain himself?
You did almost hear him kind of going, "Remember Clegmania?" Yeah, Nigel Farage is just the sweatiest man I've ever seen. He was like a sort of James Brown level of sweating and fury, which that excites me. The main surprise for the whole thing for me was Nigel Farage is only 2 years older than Nick Clegg.
Is that right?
He's lived well, hasn't he?
Wow. He wants to change his moisturiser.
He's younger than me, Nigel Farage. But he looks like
sorry,
a...
Sorry, we should have said that.
Look like a slightly speed-ravaged member of Depeche Mode. And he looks like the character on the jar of Camp Coffee.
Can you still buy Camp Coffee? We used to have it at school. That's what we were allowed.
Are you eating cakes?
What's Camp Coffee?
We had Mellow Birds, if that...
Nescafe Azera is quite camp.
Yeah.
That's pretty show tunes, that.
It's liquid coffee.
With a bit of chicory.
With a little bit of chicory.
Essence.
In it.
Yeah. Coffee in
is
a bottle.
Is this during the war?
I mean, it was all about Europe, and that was, you know, nobody touched on the fact that, you know, they don't support gay marriage, they don't believe that the climate change is happening and stuff like that. And the trouble is, it did highlight the fact that the Lib Dems just love everything about Europe. I mean, that is all the Lib Dems really care about is stinky cheese and the single transferable vote. The whole inspiration for the Liberal Democrat Party is the vast superiority of French campsites. That's all they really believe in.
But how irritated must Europe have been to have Nick Clegg defending it? Was Max Clifford not available? I mean, that's...
You get the vibe with Farage. Whenever I see him on anything, it's that, you know, when you go to a family wedding and there's always someone goes, "Is Uncle Colin coming?" "Yeah, we've got to invite your Uncle Colin. We can't." You can't not invite your Uncle Colin. Oh, but he'll start, won't he? He'll start about Europe. It's all he ever wants to talk about, Uncle Colin. He'll start about the foreigners and the waiters, and he'll ask where the wines come from. But he's got to come. UKIP have got that vibe. Whenever I see him, I go, oh, dear. There's never a positive thought that comes into your mind with UKIP. You know, the Tories make me angry, the Liberals make me laugh, Labour make me want to put a shotgun in my mouth. But UKIP, it's a real sort of, oh, really?
But, Jeremy, you said they don't believe in gay marriage or climate change. Do they not, as I understand it, believe that climate change is caused by gay marriage? I just apologise in advance for the downpour that's going to happen this weekend. I think of it, it's not rain, but wet confetti.
That's why I'm staying in on Saturday, because I just don't want to... It's obviously going to rain. The thing was, that's not true, actually, because nothing happened in Scotland weather-wise. It was all the Somerset floodplains, as a clue. So I don't think when gay marriage comes in, it didn't rain everywhere. Scotland, for some reason, maybe it's because we've got a giant umbrella of...
Because Scottish people are gay but don't enjoy it.
Lucy Porter, you have just summarised my life. Just this quick. Should we get a cat then? No, let's get four. Me as well, eh? Let's have two.
Are you going to dress the cats up as the Bay City Rollers again?
This week, Nick Clegg and Nigel Farage debated Britain's membership of the European Union for an hour on the radio. The leaders of the Lib Dems and UKIP disagreed repeatedly about the facts and figures of EU membership, but did agree they were the two most unpopular men in British politics. Amongst Farage's claims was the notion that 29 million Romanians and Bulgarians could enter the UK. This is unlikely, as that would involve emptying both countries entirely and a couple of people having to come twice. Spokespeople from other parties commented on the debate. Labour's John Ashworth called it amusing. Plaid Cymru's Leanne Wood complained that the debate hadn't focused enough on Wales. And David Cameron wondered where that little man who usually follows him around looking sad had got to all evening. The debate was hosted by Nick Ferrari, a man named after the entire gameplay strategy for Grand Theft Auto. At 2 points to Susan. Lucy, who has urged Miliband to be Millibold?
Well, poor Ed Miliband. Aww. I do feel described always now as beleaguered, which is a word they only ever use for football managers and Labour leaders, really, isn't it? It's that kind of, it's a near anagram and synonym for buggered. basically. His own party have turned on him. The polls have turned on him. There was a couple of polls this week. In one poll, less than one in five people said they could see him as Prime Minister. And then there was an even worse poll which said 41% of people would describe him as very weird or somewhat weird.
What was the question in the poll?
It was a horrible poll, actually, because it said he would be most likely of all the leaders to have been bullied at school. Aww. But people did say he would have worked hard, but would have been bad at sport. But you see, I think this is the thing with Ed Miliband, is I think actually what we loved about him, nerds like... I'm looking at the audience, us. We loved initially the fact that he was quite a sort of nerdy, dorky bloke. And this is exactly what the Labour Party seem to be trying to iron out. And they are just making him into another kind of identikit politician. I think it's like they've seen the end of Greece and they've thought, yeah, that's what we want, is we want to put him in some tight pants and make him a bit sexy. And you sort of look at him now and you see that kind of... It's like the man, the passion there is still going. You want there to be a kind of RoboCop moment where he suddenly remembers that he was a human being once upon a time.
Do you think the letter will help, though? Because it seems to me sending a letter to Ed Miliband telling him to be bold is a bit like sending a letter to the Pope suggesting he gets a girlfriend. Do you know what I mean? It's just...
People keep saying he doesn't look like a prime minister, but I would take that as a compliment, really. I'd be quite offended if someone said, oh, you look like a prime minister. I mean, David Cameron looks like a right prime minister. He really does. He loves it. That's what the most revolting thing about David Cameron is, how much he loves being Prime Minister. And one thing you can say in defence of Gordon Brown is that when he finally got the job he had craved for so long, yeah, he absolutely bloody hated it.
Oh no, what have I done? Oh God, no, make it stop, make it stop.
See, I look at Ed Miliband's face and I think it's a bit like his surname. It's very long and the eyes are too close together. An alliance of think tanks, including the Fabian Society and Progress, have written a letter to Ed Miliband urging him not to play things safe and not to fight the election with a manifesto based on Conservative unpopularity. The letter was prompted by Labour lessening its lead in the polls. Miliband responded well to the suggestion he should be bold going into the next election, saying he would reply to the letter as soon as a very large spider had moved away from his writing desk. The letter, published in The Guardian, was designed to voice party concerns and raise Mr. Miliband's confidence, a mission which was undermined when they accidentally began the letter, "Dear David." The authors of the letter argue that Britain needs transformative change. Ah, yes, transformative change, as opposed to those other types of change where everything stays exactly the same. 2 points to Lucy. Jeremy, who wants to use all their energy to break up the Big Six?
Ofgem. Let's just nationalise the energy companies. You know, my life's coming to an end. I haven't got time to switch power companies. You know, I'm not going to spend my days trying to choose between different power companies. Let's just take them all back and we can choose between gas and electric and that's the end of it. But you know what? I feel absolutely no... Rather than the French and Chinese governments controlling our power companies, maybe our government should control... Well, maybe not this government, because...
I can't bear you saying that you're heading towards the end of your life. It's ridiculous. You've got at least another 6 months. It's absurd.
People knock on my door and say, "Who supplies your gas?" And I just think, "Not you. Get out of my face. I've got windows to stare out of." And they say, "Everybody else on the street has signed up to us." And I think, well, then they can pitchfork me to death for not joining up. The very fact that you've knocked on my door when I was on the lav means I will never sign up. Frankly, I would rather have imperfect pizza deliver my gas and electricity than you. And they say, "Oh, why don't you all switch?" Yeah, that's a fun game to play every day, switching utilities companies. When it comes to gas and electricity companies, you're basically limited to gas and electricity companies to choose among. It's not a smorgasbord of choice. It's not like Match.com, except to the extent that, you know, you waste all of your free time interacting with liars and mountebanks until you're so worn down. Worn down by their lies and blandishments. You eventually get shafted by one of them.
Can you imagine what it must be like if you are an energy company and you knock on Jeremy's door? Energy regulator Ofgem said on Thursday that energy companies may be making excess profits and ripping off loyal customers. It called for a full competition and markets authority investigation that could result in the breakup of the Big Six energy companies. The Big Six energy companies account for about 95% of the UK's energy supply market, or to give it its technical term, a North Korean election result of the market. Energy company Centrica warned that the investigation may lead to more blackouts, making them the only energy company in history to try and hold light hostage. Ofgem said that energy retail profits of Britain's six largest energy suppliers had soared from £233 million in 2009 to £1.1 billion in 2012. Those figures based on the bills of just one residential street in Barnsley. At the end of round one, the scores are Susan and Lucy have got 4 points, but so too have Jeremy and Phil. We start round two with a cutting from the Coventry Telegraph.
Coventry City Football Club chief executive Tim Fisher was attacked in a London pub by angry fans after their game against Brentford. Eyewitnesses said that Mr. Fisher entered the pub to use the toilet, but had drinks and stools thrown at him.
And our thanks to Joe Bradford for sending us that. Susan, have a listen to this. Here come the Susan, why are you now more likely to get a sex change at your local surgery? I didn't mean you in particular, obviously.
This is a story which initially seems quite positive, but then is quite annoying, actually.
Oh.
Recent figures have shown that, for the first time ever, there are more women who are GPs than men. 51% of GPs are now women, which is fantastic. That's fine. But after these results were announced, there was some rather odd criticism of it by some people. There was some professor who said that the gender imbalance was becoming worrying. Now, 51% of GPs are women. That's not a gender imbalance. That's a gender balance, actually, for the first time. And then someone else said, I became quite vexed when I read this story. Vexed.
Yes, no, yes. I can tell.
Someone else said that it was worrying because it was pointing towards an increasing feminization of the medical profession. And that in some way we should be stopping this gender imbalance where women are doing the job they are qualified to do. Because next thing you know, you'll go into your GPs and before you get your consultation, you'll have to do a bit of baking and perhaps they'll bring out a wand and some fairy dust, maybe, something like that. And they'll ask you how you're doing. Are you all right? Now, let's have a gossip first before I decide. Oh, you're lovely. I won't like to see her. Now. It is insulting to suggest that just because someone who's doing the job is a woman, they are then feminising the profession that they are doing. That is not how it works.
I know, but I quite like some of this. I quite like this in order to get you to go, ah, oh, they show you a picture of a lovely kitten.
I just, it's, I was so angry. So angry.
You're becoming hysterical,
idea,
my dear.
That women who take the same exams, go through the same process in order to become a GP, who are as good as the men, some of the leading surgeons in the world are women. Why? Because you're a woman, do you suddenly become more feminine? Has anyone met me? For God's sake!
I'm afraid Susan has fainted because her corset's rather tight. It is a worry that women, or lady manesses, as I prefer to call it, are taking over jobs where, because they'll be sitting on their chairs sideways and having a touch of the vapours.
Because GPs have traditionally been so macho, haven't they? I mean,
tell me about your GP, Liz.
No, yeah, mine, it's all, yeah, back issues of Playboy in the waiting room and, oh, you know, oh, it's, yeah, it's like Hugh Hefner's house around my GPs. See, what I object to, and I agree with Susan, it infuriates me as well, is that there's also been people saying, well, of course, it's just because being a GP's got a lot easier because they've given up out-of-hours services and so now it's compatible with family life. Gay. And you know, so you can actually do a job and have a family life as well, and you know that appeals not only to women but to men as well. That yes, you know GPs, they know how they've had the children and they want to spend time
no,
with them.
No, men don't need to bother about their own children. That's for ladies. That's lady talk. That's men shouldn't be bothered by children. They should be out earning the money while we're at home soaping ourselves up, waiting for our husband's return. It's what I'm doing right now for Jeremy.
But, well, I mean, the argument is, well, women go off and just have babies like they do in their way. And you think, well, all right, if women want to go part-time, what's the problem with that? Because a lot of doctors moonlighting in the private sector or playing golf, or the fact is GP surgeries are small businesses, so they're spending all their time in meetings doing PowerPoint presentations and hardly doing any doctoring at all. You try and get an appointment with any doctor and it's like, how are you fixed in 2017?
I've spent thousands getting my daughter trained as a doctor, and I thought it's fantastic, so I'm going to leapfrog the whole system. And so I ring her now for lunch, and I get a message that says I'm held 19th in the queue. That if having your blood pressure taken puts your blood pressure up. Mm. Did you see this?
A doctor specifically is worse than a nurse.
Yeah, apparently, as they come at you. And I'm not surprised, because they corner you, don't they? And then they strap you into an armband and tell you about these invisible dangers to your well-being.
What hellish doctor are you going to?
New statistics show that for the very first time, more women than men are GPs. Data from the Health and Social Care Information Centre show that in the past year, the number of female GPs has risen by 2.3%, following a 2.3% rise in the number of male GPs being struck by lightning on the golf course. On the subject of GPs' surgeries, a recent poll found that 28% of patients could not get an appointment within a week. The other 72% died while on hold to speak to a receptionist. 2 points to Susan. Jeremy, where in the world can you rack up legal bills of £250,000?
Oh, this is this really turgid story. I can't... It's a horrible travesty of justice, but it's not the Shawshank Redemption, is it? Let's be honest. The trouble is with this story, a bloke, and bless him, he spent years in his quest for justice. He bought a laptop, he didn't like it because it didn't fit, took it back the next day and then was trapped in this payment plan, which meant that his credit rating was shot and he was ruined, and people pointed at him in the street and said, you broke your credit agreement. We will never trust you, you weirdo. And his life was ruined, and he's battled for years to get justice, and it's finally gone to the Supreme Court in America and they've awarded him a Hershey bar. And you think, do you know what? My heart goes out to you, but it's really dull. This is about a credit agreement for a laptop. It's not going to make a film. Do you know what he should have done? He should have gone into the company, taken somebody hostage. That's what I would recommend. he should have gone into the company, held somebody hostage. He'd have gone down for 5 years. It would have made a great film. This is going to be like a really bad daytime type reconstruction.
No, I think the original story has got some real good points in it there, Leif. The lovely close-up of him signing the agreement.
Yeah.
But then the camera zooms into the claws. It's his undoing. And I'm writing this film, Hardy. You're wrong. And I'm going to call it It's the Long Walk to Dixon's.
I appreciate Jeremy's suggestion of violence to solve a simple shop dispute. I would suggest it. I used to work in a shop in that chain, and I was in charge of microwaves and vacuum cleaners.
So they gave you the small stuff to look after.
Anyway, what I was trying to say was, not in defence of the store, because it's indefensible and stuff, but it wasn't their fault, it was the finance company's fault, is that it was kill or be killed in shops like that. You had a target, and you had to reach the target. I had to try and sell these guarantee things on batteries to people. So you would see people come in and they go, can I have 4 AA batteries? And I go, yeah, but have you thought about 5 years down the line when your remote control runs out of batteries?
If it's kill or be killed, then being taken hostage is a cakewalk. Don't worry about that. You know, imagine him taking it seriously.
No, there are worse places to be held hostage than in an electrical goods store. You know, you've got entertainment, you've got... I mean, I used to do a Saturday job in a shoe shop, and that would be... Once you'd tried on about 6 pairs of espadrilles, you've run out of excitement there, haven't you?
You could threaten people with warranties, couldn't you?
How does it happen to me? I am trying to host a show about the news. And we're now discussing which shop we'd most like to be held hostage in.
Everyone is listening to Radio 4 and going, it's John Lewis, for God's sake.
Of course it is. That is true, actually.
Is it John Lewis?
Would be because really cool.
Because you could have fun in the haberdashery.
You could sleep
in
the
cup of tea and then we'd go and try on some clothes.
No, yes. I'm joining in. Stop it. consumer Richard Durkin has finally won a 16-year battle over payments for a returned laptop, which saw him amass £250,000 in legal fees. Durkin bought the laptop from PC World on a credit agreement from HFC Bank, but when he returned it, the credit agreement was not cancelled. He was blacklisted, leaving him unable to buy a house, prevented from 0% balance transfer deals, and unable to watch the YouTube video of a panda sneezing. The case was heard by the Supreme Court, which is exactly like a normal court, except the judge has two backing singers.
That's actually not fair, because Mary Wilson was a much better singer than Diane Rowe.
2 points to Jeremy. Phil, who's got the guts to say someone is lying?
Apparently, you're supposed to go with your gut instinct.
Yes.
Over rational thought. The first thing that you think is supposed to be the right thing.
Yeah, not all the time, though. What is the story about?
It's about whether you believe people or not.
Yeah, which is lying.
It's a difficult thing. I mean, you say it will go with your gut. Your gut instinct is usually right. But it could just be wind. That's the problem. Because now that we understand the human digestive system, we have a much better understanding of human nature, because we used to call greedy business people bloated capitalists. Now we understand that that is irritable bowel syndrome.
It's the age-old thing. All of us have our own ways of thinking. Usually it's if someone, for me, looks like someone I know is a liar, then I think they're a liar. And for men, it's their shoes.
Oh,
if men have got a particular type of shoe on, I call them crime watch shoes. It's the shoes you always see them in the reconstructions wearing.
Can I just say, in those crime watch things, I don't think that's the bit you're supposed to be noticing.
If someone's wearing a pair of crime watch shoes, I think you're a liar.
This may be the biggest breakthrough in criminal detection that has been made in the last century.
Yeah.
Calvin watches the shoes.
You look at the shoes. Tell you what.
Tell
right?
us.
Yeah. What's she doing? Going to work our way along the front row now and tell us who the liars are. Okay, right.
Yeah, go on.
Steel toe cap boot.
That's honest. That's
green
an honest
flash
shoe.
Pencil.
Tell you what's not an honest shoe. A sandal.
Oh,
not an honest shoe.
Right, but a Birkenstock.
Honest lesbian shoe. Honest shoe.
I've got a pair of Birkies.
Yeah, rest my case.
Yeah. Shoes.
What about fit flops?
Sorry?
Fit flops.
Liar. Look at someone's shoes and build up your own Rolodex of Marple-like deductions. Look at the shoes of people you know lie. If your boss lies, look at their shoes. Then look at other people that wear shoes like that. They're probably liars too, because liars always buy the same shoes as each other.
Or so they tell you.
CSI Dulcis.
This evening feels as though a collection of people that I know quite well have decided to all at the same time and without telling me go off their medication.
Thing is, you can't tell if someone's really... Thing is, some people are just born looking a bit shifty. Because I'm lower middle class, I'm just laden with guilt and embarrassment. And I used to blush at school all the time when the head teacher would say something like, somebody in the school has relieved themselves on one of the school's favourite hamsters. And I would go bright red, because I'm just born guilty.
I do think women are better at this kind of gut instinct thing. I can spot a liar a mile away. Unfortunately, by the time they've got that far, it's too late for me to get my purse back. But scientists at the University of California, Berkeley, have discovered that the conscious mind is very bad at spotting a liar, and that you are better off relying on gut instinct, or, in rare occasions, the enormous growing nose of a wooden child. The classic physical detections of lying, such as averting eye contact and fidgeting, do not necessarily mean a person is lying, just that they like Dungeons and Dragons and don't often speak to girls. People who consciously try to spot liars tend to look for stereotypical clues, such as averting the gaze, looking shifty-eyed, or the sentence, "Hello, I'm an estate agent." At the end of round two, the scores are Susan and Lucy have got 8 points, but so too have Jeremy and Phil. We start round three with an item from a Conservative Party email bulletin.
Back our long-term economic plan by donating £10 today.
She's not really that funny, because we think it's possibly true. It's Our thanks to Maury MacDonald for sending us that. Susan, who fancies a cuppa?
Well, all of us do, but
well,
not
yes, so, now here's the thing. It is actually a serious question. Oh. So, I have been doing this show for years, okay, and I realise that we never stop for tea. I don't recall a single tea break on this show in more than 20 years that I've been doing it, so I thought we'd have a cup while we play.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, right. So, would you be mother, Neil?
Oh, well, yeah.
Don't mind, is that all right? Yes,
all
I've just put the tea things at the back there. So what was the
tea
actual...
Wine.
Yeah, tea, thank you.
I like mine very strong. I like mine like I like my men weak.
So what is the question
about?
Okay. Yes.
Well, the... This is genuinely the strangest news quiz. Yeah, at the same time, strangely thrilling. So what this is about is... In the office, people used to... You would get up and say, anyone fancy a cuppa? That was my Cockney accent. I'll try again. Anyone fancy a cuppa? No. anyone fancy a cuppa?
Dick Van Dyke suddenly seems a lot more plausible.
Right, so... People, oh,
sorry,
thanks.
Susan, I can't remember. Did you want...
No, that's absolutely... Okay. Thanks very much.
Say it in Scottish. You know it drives me wild.
What?
Would you like some tea?
In the workplace, what you used to do is you go, "Oh, governor, anyone wants a cup of tea?"
I've got that bit.
And then you would make tea for everybody.
Yeah.
What they're saying is now that people don't do that anymore. In fact, they actively avoid making tea for everyone else. And people say it's because their boss doesn't. And so it's kind of a protest of some kind. And so the tea break, as we know it, is dying out. Because you still go, "Oh, it's time for tea. Let's all have tea and all have a chat." It's the same at home. If someone stands up at home, then they have to make the tea, so everyone just sits down all night. The other evening, I love tea, and I was desperate for it. I phoned the house phone from my mobile so that Lee had to get up to answer the phone, and then I answered and went, "I'll have a cuppa."
Offices are all open plan, that's the trouble, because it used to be you could nip into somebody else's office saying, "I'm just going to get a cup of tea, do you want one?" And now it's all this open plan. And hot desking. The BBC thing called hot desking, where nobody...
It's disgusting.
Nobody has... Some sort of weird Maoist plan to break people's spirits. They have hot desks, so rather than go to the kettle, you leave a cup of cold water on your desk... And the water gradually heats up during the day. But it's because, and that way, you're not going to stand up and say, "Anyone want a cup of tea?" Because 300 people will say yes, and that will be the rest of your day.
Does anyone slurp their... Is it polite to slurp? Is it not polite?
No.
This is turning into the Archers with all this crockery and cutlery. Darling, I just think our attempts to address the modern world are somewhat implausible. Yes, I know, darling.
I think we should be patronising about rural issues so urban people understand.
I've got peppermint tea. Thank you, Neil. I've got peppermint tea. It's meant to be good for headaches, because I think when you drink it, you're so consumed by how disgusting it tastes, you forget how much your head hurts.
Neil, it's a lovely cup of tea, Neil.
Yeah,
thank you very much indeed.
Very nice, darling.
At the risk of sounding like an old fogey, it isn't just the open plan offices. It is also that tea and coffee orders have become way more complicated.
That's true. It's all
because
half-shot.
We've been spoilt by coffee shops and what have you. Yeah. So, yeah, I drink ridiculous tea. Rhubarb and blackcurrant, and I'm proud of it. I don't care.
I just drink tea. And sometimes you go into people's houses and they say, "Do you want a cup of tea?" And you go, "Yeah, I'd like a cup of tea." And they go, "Well, we've got jasmine and vanilla, or we've got cherry and blah, 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 blah." And you go, "I'd just like a cup of tea, a cup of bricky tea, like a proper, just really strong builder's tea, thank you." They go, "You know, we don't have that in the house because Jocastra doesn't enjoy it."
You go to
you are never coming to my house again, Susan Cameron.
If you go to a tea shop in Glasgow and you say, "I'd like a cup of herbal tea, please." "We've got liver and bacon. We've got..."
My husband bought one of those ridiculous machines and it's made the whole thing an absolute palaver. But he bought it because it was expensive. And he said, "Well, it'll be fine because it means I won't go out to coffee shops and buy coffee anymore."
Thank you.
And I caught him the other day with... He'd been to a coffee shop and it was like he'd been seeing other...
I'm sorry, Sandy, to raise a problem with our biscuits over here, but we've been
given... You care for a bourbon instead.
What happened to Gary Baldy?
Oh, God, he was at Radio 1. Terrible things.
Gary
Can I just say, I did what I usually do at home, and I licked all the biscuits. Because that's what you do at home to make sure no one eats your biscuits.
You are never coming round to my house.
Next week on the News Quiz, Corey Caulfield makes mojitos.
A survey has found that 1 in 10 workers don't have the time to do a tea run. The other 9 in 10 don't have a job. The poll was conducted by the Royal Voluntary Service Charity, which sends royals to your workplace to make tea. Tea is, of course, quintessentially British. It was taken from Asia hundreds of years ago. We still import it from India and China, but claim it as our own, and there's nothing more British than that. 2 points to Susan. Nice having tea. It's nice, isn't it?
Nice.
Lucy, why did a bare-faced donation leave many donating to bears?
The no-makeup selfie phenomenon, which I kind of loved this because it started out as something that you went, oh, this is so irritating. Because it used to be that if you wanted to get annoyed with teenagers, you had to actually know some teenagers. Whereas now, thanks to the internet, you can be irritated by teenagers in the comfort of your own home without... never needing to know one. So a lot of teenagers decided to take pictures of themselves with no makeup on because that is the bravest thing anyone could ever do. Which is true. You do go out sometimes. If you see teenagers now, it is like they're in fancy dress as kind of mahogany cabinets with eyelashes. It's ridiculous. So to be fair, but you know, it's when you're a teenager, it looks very important to you. And I was like, okay, fair enough, let's let them get away with it. But then a lot of people started saying, well, actually, is this just narcissism? And they said, no, actually, it's for cancer. And the donation started rolling in. And actually, £8 million was raised for cancer research, which is an amazing thing. But the bit that amused me of the story was that quite a lot of money went to UNICEF, because the wrong thing was texted, but also quite a lot of teenagers almost accidentally adopted a polar bear because they texted bear instead of beat, which was the appropriate thing. Which it was good, actually, as a consciousness-raising thing for me, because it did make me realise I had been mistexting. I have actually, for years now, been raising money to shave the children.
But I didn't know that women publicly refusing to glam up could be worth so much. I must be worth £5,000 a day for...
What I loved as well was the male response to it was then boys decided, no, we're going to do something similar, cock in a sock.
Oh.
Do you know what? They put their genitals...
Worst Dr. Seuss book ever. Wow. Wow.
My Twitter feed is very carefully chosen, and it's usually nice pictures of a cat, nice pictures of a tortoise, nice pictures of a dog. And then suddenly these things started appearing, these photographs of men... Now, I've consciously avoided seeing that. I've made a professional choice. And it was...
I got married.
The odd thing was, my feelings changed towards it as Lucy's. Initially, I was like, it's not brave to not wear makeup. That's just what people do. And I never wear makeup, which surprises. Sometimes members of the public will come up to me if they've just seen me on television. They see me from afar and go, oh, that's Susan Cullum because she's the right height. And as they come towards me, you see their face. It's like walking towards an ugly child. You know, you go, oh, there's a baby. Oh, my. Ugh. So any awareness of cancer research is brilliant. The only thing that's slightly odd about it is suggesting that the bravery of not wearing makeup equates to the bravery of people who are going through cancer treatment just now, because there is no equating it. But at the same time, it's got people talking, and if it gets people talking about it, great. I would like to encourage men to stop putting socks on their little bits of bobs.
When we're talking about these socks, are these socks that somebody else is wearing?
If you really want to improve the lives of everyone in the UK, simply text STOP to Jeremy Clarke. Many people who donated money as part of the no-makeup selfie trend ended up donating money to UNICEF or the WWF. Those whose phones autocorrected the texted word beat to bear found that they had begun the process of adopting a polar bear. A no-makeup selfie is a photograph one takes of oneself wearing no makeup. Coincidentally, a polar bear is just a panda bear without eyeliner. The upshot is that there are now lots of polar bears out there who think they've been adopted when they haven't. I know, it's like an episode of Frozen Planet crossed with the musical Annie. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Ms. Kalman.
This has been sent in by Jeremy Williams, and it's from the Sunday Times. A prisoner who tried to conceal a mobile phone was discovered when guards heard his bottom ringing. The phone was removed from the 58-year-old by doctors in Sri Lanka. A prison official said, unfortunately for him, the phone rang at the wrong time and the guards knew he had the phone at the wrong end.
Mr. Hardy.
This is sent in by Ivan Krignik from Somerset, and it's a leaflet from the Quantock show. Event paramedic services will have an ambulance in attendance at the show. The show thanks them very much for their attendance. This has been generously sponsored by Ian Hayter, Granfield & Son, funeral directors.
Mr. Jupiters.
Steve Lomas of Cheshire sent this one in. I don't know what he was doing down in Worthing, but he got a copy of the Worthing Herald. Council has expressed their excitement at the prospect of a retractable roof on the Lido when they unanimously approved a proposal at a planning committee meeting. Councillor Christine Brown said, I think this is one of the most exciting things to happen in Worthing seafront in a long time. I do hope it comes off.
Let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Phil have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Susan and Lucy with 14. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the sports section of The Guardian sent in by Craig McFarlane.
Jimmy Wang put paid to Dan Evans's hopes of reaching the main draw of the Sony Open in Miami by beating the British number two, 6-4, 6-2. Evans got the better of world number 98, Tim Smychek, on Monday, but found Taiwan's Wang too hot to handle.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz with Susan Kalman, Lucy Porter, Jeremy Hardy and Phil Jupiters. And the chair was Sandy Toxvig. And the news and tea was served by me, Neil Sleaze. The chair's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Tom Neenan and Gareth Quinn, with additional material by Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, James Bugg and Gronya Maguire. The producer was Lindsay Fenner.